Another Man's Wife, and The Husband Under the Bed, written by Fyodor Dostoevsky. An Extraordinary Adventure. Chapter 1. Another Man's Wife.
"Be so kind, sir. Allow me to ask you..."
The gentleman so addressed started and looked with some alarm at the gentleman in raccoon furs who had accosted him so abruptly at 8 o'clock in the evening in the street. We all know that if a Petersburg gentleman suddenly in the street speaks to another gentleman with whom he is unacquainted, the second gentleman is invariably alarmed. And so the gentleman addressed started and was somewhat alarmed.
"Excuse me for troubling you," said the gentleman in raccoon, "but I really don't know. You will pardon me, no doubt, you see. I am a little upset."
Only then the young man in the wadded overcoat observed that this gentleman in the raccoon furs certainly was upset. His wrinkled face was rather pale. His voice was trembling. He was evidently in some confusion of mind. His words did not flow easily from his tongue, and it could be seen that it cost him a terrible effort to present a very humble request to a personage possibly his inferior in rank or condition, in spite of the urgent necessity of addressing his request to somebody. And indeed the request was in any case unseemly, undignified, strange, coming from a man who had such a dignified fur coat, such a respectable jacket of a superb dark green colour, and such distinguished decorations adorning that jacket. It was evident that the gentleman in raccoon was himself confused by all this, so that at last he could not stand it, but made up his mind to suppress his emotion, and politely to put an end to the unpleasant position he had himself brought about.
"Excuse me, I am not myself. But it is true you don't know me. Forgive me for disturbing you. I have changed my mind."
Here, from politeness, he raised his hat and hurried off. "But allow me..." The little gentleman had, however, vanished into the darkness, leaving the gentleman in the wadded overcoat in a state of stupefaction. "What a queer fellow," thought the gentleman in the wadded overcoat. After wondering, as was only natural, and recovering at last from his stupefaction, he bethought him of his own affairs, and began walking to and fro, staring intently at the gates of a house with an endless number of stories. A fog was beginning to come on, and the young man was somewhat relieved at it, for his walking up and down was less noticeable in the fog, though indeed no one could have noticed him but some cabman who had been waiting all day without a fare.
"Excuse me?"
The young man started again. Again the gentleman in raccoon was standing before him.
"Excuse me again," he began, "but you are no doubt an honourable man. Take no notice of my social position, but I am getting muddled. Look at it as man to man. You see before you, sir, a man craving a humble favour."
"If I can, what do you want?"
"You imagine, perhaps, that I am asking for money," said the mysterious gentleman with a wry smile, laughing hysterically and turning pale.
"Oh, dear, no.
No, I see that I am tiresome to you. Excuse me. I cannot bear myself. Consider that you are seeing a man in an agitated condition, almost of insanity, and do not draw any conclusion."
"But to the point," responded the young man, nodding his head encouragingly and impatiently.
"Now, think of that. A young man like you reminding me to keep to the point, as though I were some heedless boy. I must certainly be doting. How do I seem to you in my degrading position? Tell me frankly."
The young man was overcome with confusion and said nothing.
"Allow me to ask you openly, have you not seen a lady?"
"That is all that I have to ask you," the gentleman in the raccoon coat said resolutely at last.
"Lady?"
"Yes, a lady." Yes, I have seen, but I must say lots of them have passed.
Just so, answered the mysterious gentleman with a bitter smile. I am muddled. I did not mean to ask that. Excuse me. I meant to say, haven't you seen a lady in a fox fur cape, in a dark velvet hood and a black veil?
No, I haven't noticed one like that. No, I think I haven't seen one.
Well, in that case, excuse me.
The young man wanted to ask a question, but the gentleman in raccoon vanished again. Again he left his patient listener in a state of stupefaction.
Well, the devil take him, thought the young man in the wadded overcoat, evidently troubled.
With annoyance, he turned up his beaver collar and began cautiously walking to and fro again before the gates of the house of many stories. He was raging inwardly.
Why doesn't she come out? He thought. It will soon be 8 o'clock.
The town clock struck 8.
Oh, devil take you! Excuse me! Excuse me for speaking like that,
but you came upon me so suddenly that you quite frightened me, said the young man, frowning and apologizing.
Here I am again. I must strike you as tiresome and queer.
Be so good as to explain at once, without more ado. I don't know what it is you want.
You are in a hurry. Do you see? I will tell you everything openly, without wasting words. It cannot be helped. Circumstances sometimes bring together people of very different characters. But I see you are impatient, young man. So here, though I really don't know how to tell you, I am looking for a lady. I have made up my mind to tell you all about it. You see, I must know where that lady has gone. Who she is, I imagine there is no need for you to know her name, young man.
Well, well, what next?
What next? But what a tone you take with me! Excuse me, but perhaps I have offended you by calling you young man, but I had nothing. In short, if you are willing to do me a very great service, here it is. A lady, that is, I mean, a gentlewoman of a very good family, of my acquaintance, I have been commissioned, I have no family, you see.
Oh.
Put yourself in my position, young man. Oh, I've done it again, excuse me. I keep calling you young man. Every minute is precious. Only fancy that lady. But cannot you tell me who lives in this house?
Lots of people live here.
Yes, that is, you are perfectly right, answered the gentleman in raccoon, giving a slight laugh for the sake of good manners. I feel I am rather muddled. But why do you take that tone? You see, I admit frankly that I am muddled, and however haughty you are, you have seen enough of my humiliation to satisfy you. I say a lady of honourable conduct, that is, of light tendencies. Excuse me, I am so confused. It is as though I were speaking of literature. Paul de Kock is supposed to be of light tendencies, and all the trouble comes from him, you see.
The young man looked compassionately at the gentleman in raccoon, who seemed in a hopeless muddle, and pausing, stared at him with a meaningless smile, and with a trembling hand, for no apparent reason, gripped the lappet of his wadded overcoat.
"You ask who lives here?" said the young man, stepping back a little. "Yes, you told me lots of people live here."
"Here. I know that Sofya Ostavyevna lives here, too," the young man brought out in a low and even commiserating tone.
"There, you see, you see. You know something, young man?"
"I assure you I don't. I know nothing. I judged from your troubled air."
I have just learned from the cook that she does come here. But you are on the wrong track, that is, with Sofya Ostavyevna. She does not know her.
No? Oh, I beg your pardon, then.
I see this is of no interest to you, young man, said the queer man with bitter irony.
Listen, said the young man, hesitating. I really don't understand why you are in such a state, but tell me frankly. I suppose you are being deceived. The young man smiled approvingly. We shall understand one another anyway, he added, and his whole person loftily betrayed an inclination to make a half bow. You crush me, but I frankly confess that is just it. But it happens to everyone. I am deeply touched by your sympathy. To be sure, among young men, though I am not young, but, you know, habit, bachelor life among bachelors, we all know. Oh, yes, we all know. We all know. But in what way can I be of assistance to you? Why, look here. Admitting a visit to Sofya Ostafyevna, though I don't know for a fact where the lady has gone, I only know that she is in that house. But seeing you walking up and down, and I am walking up and down on the same side myself, I thought, you see, I am waiting for that lady. I know that she is there. I should like to meet her and explain to her how shocking and improper it is. In fact, you understand me. Well, I am not acting for myself. Don't imagine it. It is another man's wife. Her husband is standing over there on the Voznesensky Bridge. He wants to catch her, but he doesn't dare. He is still loath to believe it, as every husband is. Here the gentleman in raccoon made an effort to smile. I am a friend of his. You can see for yourself I am a person held in some esteem. I could not be what you take me for. Oh, of course. Well, well. So, you see, I am on the lookout for her. The task has been entrusted to me, the unhappy husband. But I know that the young lady is sly, pulled a cock forever under her pillow. I am certain she scurries off somewhere on the sly. I must confess, the cook told me she comes here. I rushed off like a madman as soon as I heard the news. I want to catch her. I have long had suspicions, and so I wanted to ask you. You are walking here? I don't know. Come, what is it you want? Yes, I have not the honour of your acquaintance. I do not venture to inquire who and what you may be. Allow me to introduce myself anyway. Glad to meet you. The gentleman, quivering with agitation, warmly shook the young man's hand. I ought to have done this to begin with, he added, but I have lost all sense of good manners. The gentleman in raccoon could not stand still as he talked. He kept looking about him uneasily, fidgeted with his feet, and, like a drowning man, clutched at the young man's hand. You see, he went on, I meant to address you in a friendly way. Excuse the freedom. I meant to ask you to walk along the other side and down the side street where there is a back entrance. I, too, on my side, will walk from the front entrance so that we cannot miss her. I am afraid of missing her by myself. I don't want to miss her. When you see her, stop her and shout to me. But I'm mad. Only now I see the foolishness and impropriety of my suggestion. No, why no, it's all right. Don't make excuses for me. I am so upset. I have never been in such a state before, as though I were being tried for my life. I must own, indeed, I will be straightforward and honourable with you, young man. I actually thought you might be the lover. That is, to put it simply, you want to know what I am doing here. You are an honourable man, my dear sir. I am far from supposing that you are he. I will not insult you with such a suspicion, but give me your word of honour that you are not the lover. Oh, very well. I'll give you my word of honour that I am a lover, but not of your wife. Otherwise I shouldn't be here in the street, but should be with her now. Wife? Who told you she was my wife, young man? I'm a bachelor, I am a lover myself. "You told me there is a husband on Voznesensky Bridge."
Of course, I am talking too freely. But there are other ties. And you know, young man, a certain lightness of character, that is—"
"Yes, yes, to be sure, to be sure.
That is, I am not her husband at all."
"Oh, no doubt. But I tell you frankly that in reassuring you now, I want to set my own mind at rest, and that is why I am candid with you. You are upsetting me and in my way. I promise that I will call you, but I most humbly beg you to move further away and let me alone. I am waiting for someone, too."
"Certainly, certainly, I will move further off. I respect the passionate impatience of your heart. Oh, how well I understand you at this moment."
"Oh, all right, all right.
Till we meet again. But excuse me, young man, here I am again. I don't know how to say it. Give me your word of honour once more, as a gentleman, that you are not her lover."
"Oh, mercy on us.
One more question. The last. Do you know the surname of the husband of your— that is, I mean, the lady who is the object of your devotion?"
"Of course I do. It is not your name, and that is all about it."
"Why, how do you know my name?"
"But, I say, you had better go. You are losing time. She might go away 1,000 times.
Why, what do you want? Your lady's in a fox cape and a hood, while mine is wearing a plaid cloak and a pale blue velvet hat. What more do you want? What else?"
"A pale blue velvet hat? She has a plaid cloak and a pale blue velvet hat," cried the pertinacious man, instantly turning back again.
"Oh, hang it all! Why, that may well be. And indeed, my lady does not come here."
"Where is she, then, your lady?"
"You want to know that? What is it to you?"
"I must own I am still—"
"Tfu! Mercy on us! Why, you have no sense of decency. None at all."
"Well, my lady has friends here, on the 3rd story, looking into the street.
Why, do you want me to tell you their names?"
"My goodness, I have friends, too, who live on the 3rd story, and their windows look onto the street."
"General—"
"General?"
"A general. If you like, I will tell you what general. Well, then, General Polovitsyn."
"You don't say so."
"No, that is not the same."
"Oh, damnation, damnation.
Not the same?"
"No, not the same."
Both were silent, looking at each other in perplexity.
"Why are you looking at me like that?" exclaimed the young man, shaking off his stupefaction and air of uncertainty with vexation.
The gentleman was in a fluster.
I must own—"
"Come, allow me, allow me. Let us talk more sensibly now. It concerns us both. Explain to me, whom do you know here?"
"You mean, who are my friends?"
"Yes, your friends."
"Well, you see, I see from your eyes that I have guessed right."
"Hang it all! No, no, hang it all! Are you blind?" "Why, I am standing here before you. I am not with her."
"Oh, well, I don't care whether you say so or not."
Twice in his fury, the young man turned on his heel with a contemptuous wave of his hand.
"Oh, I meant nothing, I assure you. As an honourable man, I will tell you all about it. At first, my wife used to come here alone. They are relatives of hers. I had no suspicions. Yesterday, I met His Excellency. He told me that he had moved 3 weeks ago from here to another flat, and my wife—that is, not mine, but somebody else's, the husband's on the Voznesensky Bridge— that lady had told me that she was with them the day before yesterday, in this flat, I mean, and the cook told me that His Excellency's flat had been taken by a young man called Bobynitsyn."
"Oh, damn it all! Damn it all!
My dear sir, I am in terror. I am in alarm."
"Oh, hang it! What is it to me that you are in terror and in alarm?
Ah, over there. Someone flitted by, over there."
"Where? Where? You just shout, Ivan Andreyich, and I will run.
All right, all right. Oh, confound it. Ivan Andreyich.
Here I am, cried Ivan Andreyich, returning, utterly breathless. What is it? What is it? Where?
Oh, no, I didn't mean anything. I wanted to know what this lady's name is.
Glafira? No, not Glafira. Excuse me, I cannot tell you her name.
As he said this, the worthy man was white as a sheet. Oh, of course it is not Glafira. I know it is not Glafira, and mine's not Glafira. But with whom can she be?
Where? There! Oh, damn it! Damn it!
The young man was in such a fury that he could not stand still.
There, you see! How did you know that her name was Glafira? Oh, damn it all, really? To have a bother with you, too? Why you say that yours is not called Glafira? My dear sir, what a way to speak! Oh, the devil! As though that mattered now. What is she, your wife? No, that is, I am not married. But I would not keep flinging the devil at a respectable man in trouble. A man, I will not say, worthy of esteem, but at any rate a man of education. You keep saying the devil, the devil.
To be sure, the devil take it. So there you are. Do you understand?
You are blinded by anger, and I say nothing. Oh, dear, who is that? Where?
There was a noise and a sound of laughter. Two pretty girls ran down the steps. Both men rushed up to them.
Oh, what manners! What do you want?
Where are you shoving?
These are not the right ones.
Aha, so you've pitched on the wrong ones.
Cab!
Where do you want to go, mademoiselle?
To Pokrov. Get in, Anushka. I'll take you.
Oh, I'll sit on the other side.
Off! Now mind you drive quickly.
The cab drove off.
Where did they come from?
Oh, dear, oh, dear. Hadn't we better go there?
Where?
Why, to Bobynitsyn's.
No, that's out of the question.
Why?
I would go there, of course, but then she would tell me some other story. She would get out of it. She would say that she had come on purpose to catch me with someone, and I should get into trouble.
And, you know, she may be there, but you, I don't know for what reason... Why, you might go to the general's.
But, you know, he has moved.
That doesn't matter, you know. She has gone there, so you go too. Don't you understand? Behave as though you didn't know the general had gone away. Go as though you had come to fetch your wife, and so on.
And then?
Well, and then find the person you want at Bobynitsyn's.
Tfu, damnation, take you! What a senseless... Well, and what is it to you, my finding? You see? You see?
What?
What, my good man?
What?
You are on the same old tack again. Oh, Lord, have mercy on us. You ought to be ashamed, you absurd person. You senseless person. Yes, but why are you so interested? Do you want to find out...
Find out what?
What? Oh, well, damnation take you. I have no thoughts for you now. I'll go alone. Go away. Get along. Look out. Be off.
"My dear sir, you are almost forgetting yourself," cried the gentleman in raccoon in despair.
"Well, what of it? What if I am forgetting myself?" said the young man, setting his teeth and stepping up to the gentleman in raccoon in a fury. "What of it? Forgetting myself before whom?" he thundered, clenching his fists. "But allow me, sir.
Well, who are you? Before whom am I forgetting myself? What is your name?"
I don't know about that, young man. Why do you want my name? I cannot tell it to you. I better come with you. Let us go. I won't hang back. I am ready for anything. But I assure you, I deserve greater politeness and respect. You ought never to lose your self-possession. And if you are upset about something, I can guess about what. At any rate, there is no need to forget yourself. You are still a very, very young man.
What is it to me that you are old? There's nothing wonderful in that. Go away. Why are you dancing about here?
How am I old? Of course, in position, but I am not dancing about.
I can see that, but get away with you.
No, I'll stay with you. You cannot forbid me. I am mixed up in it, too. I will come with you. Well, then, keep quiet. Keep quiet. Hold your tongue.
They both went up the steps and ascended the stairs to the third story. It was rather dark.
Stay. Have you got matches? Matches? What matches?
Do you smoke cigars?
Oh, yes, I have. I have. Here they are. Here they are. Here. Stay.
The gentleman in raccoon rummaged in a fluster.
Pfft, what a senseless... Damnation! I believe this is the door. This. Why are you bawling? Hush! My dear sir, overcoming my feelings, You are a reckless fellow. So there.
The light flared up.
Yes, so it is. Here is the brass plate. This is Bobunitsyn's. Do you see Bobunitsyn?
I see it, I see it.
Hush!
Why, has it gone out?
Yes, it has.
Should we knock?
Yes, we must, responded the gentleman in raccoon.
Knock, then?
No, why should I? You begin, you knock. Coward. You are a coward yourself. Get away with you. I almost regret having confided my secret to you, you...
I? What about me?
You take advantage of my distress. You see that I am upset. But do I care? I think it's ridiculous. That's all about it. Why are you here?
Why are you here, too?
Delightful morality, observed the gentleman in raccoon with indignation.
What are you saying about morality? What are you?
Well... It's immoral.
What?
Why, to your thinking, every deceived husband is a noodle.
Why? Are you the husband? I thought the husband was on Vozhenensky Bridge. So what is it to you? Why do you meddle?
I do believe that you are the lover.
Listen, if you go on like this, I shall be forced to think you are a noodle. That is, do you know who?
"That is, you mean to say that I am the husband," said the gentleman in raccoon, stepping back as though he was scalded with boiling water. "Hush! Hold your tongue. Do you hear?"
"It is she."
"No." "Fool, how dark it is!"
There was a hush. A sound was audible in Bobinitsyn's flat.
"Why should we quarrel, sir?" whispered the gentleman in raccoon.
"But you took offence yourself, damn it all.
But you drove me out of all patience. Hold your tongue. You must admit that you are a very young man. Hold your tongue. Of course I share your idea that a husband in such a position is a noodle. Oh, will you hold your tongue? Oh, but why such savage persecution of the unfortunate husband? It is she."
But at that moment... The sound ceased.
"Is it she?"
"It is, it is, it is. But why are you worrying about it? It is not your trouble."
"My dear sir, my dear sir," muttered the gentleman in raccoon, turning pale and gulping. "I am, of course, greatly agitated. You can see for yourself my abject position. But now it's night, of course. But tomorrow... Though, indeed, we are not likely to meet tomorrow, though I am not afraid of meeting you. And besides, it is not I, it is my friend on the Vozhenensky Bridge. It really is he. It is his wife. It is somebody else's wife. Poor fellow. I assure you, I know him very intimately. If you will allow me, I will tell you all about it. I am a great friend of his, as you can see for yourself, or I shouldn't be in such a state about him now, as you can see for yourself. Several times I said to him, 'Why are you getting married, dear boy? You have position, you have means, you are highly respected. Why risk it all at the caprice of coquetry? You must see that.' 'No, I am going to be married,' he said. 'Domestic bliss.' Here's domestic bliss for you. In old days he deceived other husbands. Now he is drinking the cup. You must excuse me. But this explanation was absolutely necessary. He is an unfortunate man and is drinking the cup now.'
At this point, the gentleman in raccoon gave such a gulp that he seemed to be sobbing in earnest. "'Ah, damnation, take them all. There are plenty of fools. But who are you?' The young man ground his teeth in anger.
"'Well, you must admit after this that I have been gentlemanly and open with you, and you take such a tone.
No, excuse me. What is your name?
Why do you want to know my name?
Ah,
I cannot tell you my name.
Do you know Shabrin?' the young man said quickly.
"'Shabrin?'
"'Yes, Shabrin.
Ah!'
Saying this, the gentleman in the wadded overcoat mimicked the gentleman in raccoon. "'Do you understand?'
"'No. What Shabrin?'
answered the gentleman in raccoon in a fluster.
"'He's not Shabrin. He is a very respectable man. I can excuse your discourtesy due to the tortures of jealousy.
He is a scoundrel, a mercenary soul, a rogue that takes bribes.' He steals government money. He'll be had up for it before long.
"'Excuse me,' said the gentleman in raccoon, turning pale. "'You don't know him. I see that you don't know him at all.
No, I don't know him personally, but I know him from others who are in close touch with him.
From what others, sir? I am agitated, as you see.
A fool, a jealous idiot. He doesn't look after his wife. That's what he is, if you like to know.'
"'Excuse me, young man, you are grievously mistaken.
Oh,
oh!'
A sound was heard in Bobinitsyn's flat. A door was opened. Voices were heard.
"'Oh, that's not she. I recognize her voice. I understand it all now. This is not she,'
said the gentleman in raccoon, turning as white as a sheet.
"'Hush!'
The young man leaned against the wall.
"'My dear sir, I am off. It is not she, I am glad to say. "'All right, be off, then. Why are you staying, then?
What's that to you?' The door opened, and the gentleman in raccoon could not refrain from dashing headlong downstairs. A man and a woman walked by the young man, and his heart stood still. He heard a familiar feminine voice, and then a husky male voice, utterly unfamiliar.
"'Never mind, I will order the sledge,' said the husky voice.
"'Oh, yes, yes, very well, do.
It will be here directly.'
The lady was left alone.
"'Glafira, where are your vows?'
cried the young man in the wadded overcoat, clutching the lady's arm.
"'Oh, who is it? It's you, Tvorogov. My goodness, what are you doing here?
Who is it you have been with here?'
"'Why, my husband! Go away! Go away! He'll be coming out directly, from in there, from the Polovitsyns! Go away! For goodness sake, go away!'
"'It's 3 weeks since the Polovitsyns moved. I know all about it.'
"'I—'
The lady dashed downstairs. The young man overtook her.
"'Who told you?'
asked the lady.
"'Your husband, madam, Ivan Andreyitch. He is here before you, madam.'
Ivan Andreyitch was indeed standing at the front door.
"'Aye, it's you!'
cried the gentleman in raccoon.
"'Ah, c'est vous!'
cried Glafira Petrovna, rushing up to him with unfeigned delight.
"'Oh, dear! You can't think what has been happening to me. I went to see the Polovitsyns. Only fancy! You know they are living now by Ismailovsky Bridge. I told you, remember? I took a sledge from there.' The horses took fright and bolted. They broke the sledge, and I was thrown out about 100 yards from here. The coachman was taken up. I was in despair. Fortunately, Monsieur Tvorogov...
What? Monsieur Tvorogov was more like a fossil than like Monsieur Tvorogov.
Monsieur Tvorogov saw me here and undertook to escort me. But now you are here, and I can only express my warm gratitude to you, Ivan Ilyich.
The lady gave her hand to the stupefied Ivan Ilyich, and almost pinched instead of pressing it.
"'Monsieur Tvorogov, an acquaintance of mine. It was at the Skorolupovs' ball we had the pleasure of meeting. I believe I told you. Don't you remember, Coco?'
"'Oh, of course, of course. Ah, I remember,' said the gentleman in raccoon, addressed as Coco. "'Delighted, delighted.'
And he warmly pressed the hand of Monsieur Tvorogov.
"'Who is it? What does it mean? I'm waiting,'
said a husky voice. Before the group stood a gentleman of extraordinary height. He took out a lorgnette and looked intently at the gentleman in the raccoon coat.
"Ah, Monsieur Bobunitsyn," twittered the lady. "Where have you come from? What a meeting! Only fancy, I have just had an upset in a sledge. But here is my husband, Jean, Monsieur Bobunitsyn, at the Karpov's ball."
"Ah, delighted, very much delighted. But I'll take a carriage at once, my dear."
"Yes, do, Jean. I still feel frightened. I'm all of a tremble. I feel quite giddy." "At the masquerade tonight," she whispered to Dvorogov.
"Goodbye. Goodbye, Mr. Bobunitsyn. We shall meet tomorrow at the Karpov's ball, most likely."
"No, excuse me, I shall not be there tomorrow. I don't know about tomorrow if it is like this now."
Mr. Bobunitsyn muttered something between his teeth, made a scrape with his boot, got into his sledge, and drove away. A carriage drove up. The lady got into it. The gentleman in the raccoon coat stopped, seemed incapable of making a movement, and gazed blankly at the gentleman in the wadded coat. The gentleman in the wadded coat smiled rather foolishly.
"I don't know—"
"Excuse me. Delighted to make your acquaintance," answered the young man, bowing with curiosity and a little intimidated.
"Delighted, delighted. I think you have lost your galosh—" "Oh, yes, thank you, thank you. I keep meaning to get rubber ones."
"The foot gets so hot in rubbers," said the young man, apparently with immense interest. "Jean, are you coming?"
"It does make it hot. Coming directly, darling. We are having an interesting conversation." "Precisely so. As you say, it does make the foot hot. But excuse me, I—"
"Oh, certainly."
"Delighted, very much delighted to make your acquaintance."
The gentleman in raccoon got into the carriage. The carriage set off. The young man remained standing, looking after it, in astonishment.